With us from the University of Vermeer, beautiful university. The old university?
Yes. No, we're using the physics department.
I always put the physicists in the upper building.
Yes.
Can everyone hear, by the way? With that
microphone?
Can you hear?
So I would like to thank the organizer for the kind invitation and also for the wonderful opportunity of presenting the results of Pavia Group here in this beautiful workshop. So thank you. And as you can see from the title, my talk is a three-part talk. So there's the first part about some results about the maximum likelihood approach, and the second part about the efficient use of quantum resources in the transmission of reference frames. The second part is the origin of the second part, actually in the first. We will use the results of maximum likelihood as guidelines for the alignment of reference frames. The paper I'm presenting due to a collaboration with Giacomo Mauro D'Ariano, Paolo Perinocchi and Massimiliano Filippo Sacchi. Mm-hmm. Thanks. So, the basic idea of this talk, the aim of the talk, is to provide a precise group theoretical analysis of the problem of transmitting reference frames, and in more general fashion, a group theoretical analysis of the general estimation of group transformation in the general case. This will reveal an underlying structure that is related to multiplicity, and this underlying structure can be exploited to obtain an efficient use of quantum resources in the particular problem of the transmission of a reference frame. So, I will start with a brief introduction of the concrete problem of absolute reference frames alignment. Then I will move to the more general problem of estimating unknown group transformation. We can call this problem the problem of generalized reference frames. And then I will present the results about the maximum likelihood, which are very simple and general, and they hold for a large class of groups, not only in the case of Cartesian reference frames. That's the first part of the talk. Then I will speak about the concrete problem of aligning the Cartesian axis using the previous result as guidelines. And I will show how the group theoretical structure can be used for improve the efficiency of all the known, actually known protocols. I will finish with a brief discussion about the relation between group estimation and then scoring. And I think that this can be the end of a bigger controversy about this kind of stuff. So let's start with the problem. The problem is so simple that you have heard so many times about. The problem is that there are two parties and it's involved, they have different axes and they want to communicate in order to align their axes in such a way that at the end of the protocol, both axes point in the same direction as Alice wants. So, what Alice has to communicate to Bob is the rotation corresponding to the mismatch between their two Cartesian frames. Mm-hmm. Clearly, if Alice and Bob share a common reference frame like a fixed star, the problem is trivial, in the sense that Alice can make a phone call to Bob and can say with arbitrary precision which is the rotation he has to perform in order to get alignment. The problem is not so simple in the case of the lack of a common reference frame. They have to establish it, and so they have to send real physical objects. And here we are interested in the quantum version, because the classical version is limited by quantum effects, so we want to know What are the research needs introduced by quantum mechanics in this problem? The standard protocol for absolute alignment, that means alignment without any prior knowledge of any kind of possible reference frame, as the standard form. First, it was proposed by the group of pairs in paper with hydrogen atom, and also by the Barcelona group with spins. But basically, the idea is the same in this case. And yes, the idea of the protocol is that Alice prepares a state with respect to her Cartesian frame. She superposes eigenstate of the zeta component of the angular momentum with respect to her zeta axis. She sends the spin to Bobber, and when Bobber receives the spins, he's not received the same state, but he receives a state where each spin is rotated by exactly the rotation corresponding to the mismatch between his axis and his one. So the Bobber's task is to estimate the mismatch using the state, the ultimate state he received. So he performs measurement, and at the end of the day he estimates the rotation G star, but he estimates a value which is G, and generally G is different from G star. And so the problem is minimize the errors in this protocol. So minimize means to choose the best state for Alice preparation and the best strategy for both the estimation. Best is defined in order to minimize what is called an average transmission error. We have an average over pure uniform priori distribution for the true parameters corresponding to an absolute ignorance of the true reference frame, with a posterior distribution due to the measurement, and the average is of an error function, which is actually the distance, the square distance between the estimated axis and the two ones. As you can see, this problem is a simple example of the estimation of a group parameter. So we have a group parameter, we want to estimate it with the minimum error, in some sense we define this error. So we can look to the general problem, because this is the problem simply for the group SU2, the group of rotation. We can look in a general way this problem of generalized reference frames. The idea is that we have for the communication an unknown channel which performs an unknown group transformation on the input state. The problem is to estimate the unknown transformation with minimum error. It is important to note what are the rules of this game. First rule, the input state is a pure state which is perfectly known. Second, the group transformation is completely unknown. Only the group is known. But the actual transformation is completely unknown. And third, maybe this is the most important, we allow any possible measurement on the output state. That means that the Bobber can perform any function with QBM, and he has an infinite technology for doing measurements. And he can also perform any possible statistical analysis of the data in order to estimate the transformation. At the end of this big story, what the Bobber can make is QBM. At the end of the story, he has to give a result with a set probability. So this is the known expression for QBM, and to each transformation corresponds an operator, and the operator gives the conditional probability distribution by means of a Born rule. Among the all possible QBMs, a special role is played by covariant QBM, because they have this very nice form, in the sense that they depend on the results, only via unitary operator, and covariant QBM is completely specified by a fixed operator psi, and so optimizing means only optimized on this psi. But they are not only nice, they are also general. As proved by Polygo, there is no loss of generality in optimizing using covariant QBMs. Polygo proved this theorem, which says that for any general, for any possible QPN, there is always another QPN, which is covariant, and it has the same average error. So there is no loss of generality in assuming covariant QPNs in this kind of problem. But what we want to do now is to lose the generality, because we want to study a particular, a really particular problem, which is the problem of maximum likelihood. This problem consists in maximizing the probability, or the probability density in the continuous case, of obtaining the true value of the parameter of the group. It corresponds to a very particular choice of error, which is error zero, if we guess exact the true result, and a huge error for any other possible estimation, so it's a particular choice. There is also a generality in this. But we are interested in this problem, and yes, two comments more. The idea of maximum likelihood is exactly the same idea of square root measurement. The idea is the idea of maximizing the probability of success. But it's a different idea from maximum likelihood in statistics, because in this problem we are optimizing both the measurement and the statistical estimation over the data. In statistics, one uses maximum likelihood only for a fixed measurement and in order to optimize the estimation strategy. So it is slightly different. So why to study maximum likelihood? Because it is so, it's so precise and defined problem that maybe it's not so general yet. There are many reasons. The first is that for pure induced rate, there is a simple, general, and nice solution, which holds for a very large class of groups, including discrete groups, compact groups, and also a class of non-compact groups. And it holds also for ordinary unitary representation, and also for ray representation, projective representation. So we have a big generality in this approach. And another reason is that large class of optimization problems can be cast in a maximum likelihood form. Basically, the idea of maximum likelihood is that we are not interested in the refined detail of the optimization. We are interested in the hard core of the problem. We are interested in understanding what matters in the problem, what is the underlying structure of the optimization problem. And I think that for this purpose, maximum likelihood is the best we can have, because we have simplicity and generality at the same time. So that's the reason I offer the interest to maximum likelihood. Now I will go to show some simple results of maximum likelihood measurement. The first thing which is useful is to decompose the Hilbert space in irreducible invariant subspaces. I decompose here the space as direct sum, and I regrouped all equivalent representation with the Greek index mu, and I labeled different equivalent representation with the latent English index 1, I, sorry. And you can note the I range from 1 to m mu, which is the number of time, the number of equivalent representation corresponding to the equivalence class mu that we have in the Hilbert space. Equivalent representations, what does it mean, equivalent representation? It means that two spaces carry equivalent representation, if and only if there is a suitable choice of spaces, such that the action of the group is represented on both subspaces by the same matrices. So basically, equivalence is a one-to-one correspondence between bases in different subspaces. In other words, this correspondence is an isomorphism. That means, if you we have two different subspaces carrying the equivalent representation, for any vector in one subspace, there is a corresponding one in the other subspace. So we can move vectors using these isomorphism operators from one subspace to another subspace which is equivalent to the first. Basically, we can put all the vectors in the same subspace and compare them. For example, we can say that they are orthogonal in the same subspace. This is a very important concept. What turns out is that for any pure input state, it's possible to do a canonical decomposition of the state in invariant subspaces. In this decomposition, there are the phi and mu, which are the components in the invariant subspaces, and there are coefficients. And the important thing is that we have only a limited number of equivalent representation, which is this k mu, which is the minimum between dimension and multiplicity for each class. And this component satisfies this orthogonality, generalized orthogonality relation. And we call this orthogonality iso-orthogonality. This means orthogonality modulo isomorphism. In the sense that if we have two components in equivalent subspaces, we can move the two vectors in the same subspace and check if they are orthogonal. If they are orthogonal, we call them iso-orthogonal, which is a stronger property than a super orthogonality. So that's the first point. We need only a number of equivalent representation which is smaller than the dimension of subspaces. No more is needed. First result, for a fixed input state, it's possible to give this bound. Forget about the detail. The important thing is that this bound is given by a scalar product, basically, between the vector of coefficients and the vector of square root of dimensions. But this is and this bound is achieved by a covariant UTM, which is has this remarkably simple formula. Basically, the PVN can be obtained from the state, simply substitute from the state, as you can see in the canonical decomposition, substituting the coefficient with the square root of dimensions. So it's an immediate, the optimization is very simple, and we can get immediately this PVN. But we are interested in the best, so we want to maximize also over all possible input states. The maximization is quite easy. This is a scalar product, so we can use a Schwarz inequality. The result is the following. The output is bounded by a sum, where the sum is over dimension of invariant subspaces times the number of, times that equivalent representation are used. This bound can be achieved, so this is the idea of maximum likelihood. The idea is that equivalent representation are crucial for enhancing the value of this likelihood, and the power of the equivalent representation can be actually used in by a state. That's the main result of maximum likelihood. So, yes, that I said, the first point is the importance of equivalent representation, and another point is the general observation. The number of equivalent representation which can be exploited is not the full multiplicity, but only the minimum between the multiplicity and the dimension. What does it mean? It can be explained very simply with the two examples. First example is the case of a phase shift. We know that the group is abelian in this case, so the ordinary representations are one dimensional, monodimensional. So if we take two different vectors in two equivalent subspaces and apply a phase shift to them, we obtain that they rotate with the phase, but the equivalence between the two representations corresponds to have the same phase in front of both. So they have the same frequencies, and they carry the same information about phase shifts. In this case, equivalent representations are completely useless, because to take a superposition of N1 and N2 give the same information of taking only N1, for example. The situation is dramatically different in the case of rotation. Let me consider the case of dimension 2j plus 1, so angular momentum j, okay? And let's take two equivalent subspaces. In each subspace, there is a basis of eigenstate of the eigenstate of the z component of angular momentum. If we take two different eigenvalue vectors of the angular momentum, we have different property of transformation under rotation. For example, if we apply a rotation around the z axis, we obtain two different frequencies in front of the vectors. Different frequencies means that the two different vectors carry different information, and the uniform superposition of these two vectors is more informative than only one vector. In this case, equivalent representation can be exploited, and this is the idea. So, summarizing, in the general case, as we saw from this group theoretical analysis, equivalent representations are crucial for storing information about group transformations. The mechanism is that the orthogonal vectors in orthonormal basis carry different information about the transformations. So, using a number of equivalent representation, which is equivalent to the dimension, we can accommodate in different subspaces different vectors of in an entire basis. In other words, the idea that the maximum likelihood approach suggests strongly to use a uniform superposition of vectors in equivalent representation. Sorry. We can translate this result in a more compact notation. Instead of using a big direct sum, we can factorize the equivalent representation using a multiplicity subspace. In this case, the dimension of the multiplicity subspace is exactly equal to the number of equivalent representation. The action of the group is irreducible on the first subspace, which we can call the representation subspace, and it is trivial on the second. In other words, the multiplicity subspace is the coherence-free subspace with respect to rotations, to transformation. And the representation subspace is a decoherence-full subspace, according to the recent paper. So, what is the translation? Our canonical decomposition in this formula becomes simply a Smith decomposition of an entangled vector. And the maximal uniform superposition of equivalent representation becomes a maximal entangled state between a representation space and the multiplicity space. The best state for maximum likelihood is a superposition with some coefficient of maximally entangled states between representation subspaces and multiplicity subspaces. As you can know, there is a strong analogy with the work from Saint-Germain Vidal. This work was about SUD transformation, so special transformation. This is a general form. And yes, this is the particular code for maximum likelihood. The idea of maximum likelihood is in that dimension. If you want to forget about maximum likelihood, you can replace this dimension with an arbitrary coefficient. That's the idea. There is, we need to take some care about the entanglement in this case, because this is a particular definition of entanglement. Entanglement between a representation space and a multiplicity is not entanglement, not necessarily entanglement in the physical sense, but it is a virtual entanglement, like Paolo Zanardi explained so fully in his papers. And the idea is that there is no general relation for general groups between this group theoretical entanglement and the real entanglement of a multipartite system. For example, is it possible to have this entanglement for elementary systems which possess no internal degrees of freedom? So there are examples of a military system where we can define this kind of dynamic. And for a tripartite system, we can also have a real separable state, which are maximally tied in this group theoretical sense. So it's not clear that this virtual entanglement is a real physical resource when we prepare this state. And this is an important point for our followers. So now we can use these guidelines of maximum likelihood in order to get an efficient use of resources for the particular problem of a reference of Cartesian reference frames. Yes, I summarize here the idea of the absolute protocol for alignment. The absolute, what I call absolute protocol, is a protocol which uses only the unknown group theoretical channel. So all the spins which are communicated go along this unknown channel. And this channel is simply due to the mismatch between Alice and Bob. So I will refer to absolute alignment as this kind of protocol. Yes, the idea is to use maximum likelihood for an efficient use of resources. So we can make two answers. The first is in choice of Alice state. As you can see, the mu of the equivalence class in the case of rotation becomes the number, the quantum number j. So we have this superposition of maximally entangled space between a representation space and a multiplicity space, with a coefficient that now we can vary because we want to optimize and we want to do something which is better than the pure maximum likelihood approach. The second answer is in the choice of Bob's estimation strategy, which chooses simply the maximum likelihood UPM, as I showed before. With these two answers, it's very easy to perform a partial optimization over these coefficients. And I think that the result can be appreciated in the best way if we compare it with the previous result, which neglected the equivalent representations. So we can compare this partially optimized protocol with the optimal protocol which uses equivalent representation only one time. So we can note that with a small number of qubits of transmission, we have immediately an improvement. This is an improvement of 17%, it's not so small. And 3 is the smallest number that allows us to see the effect of equivalent representation, because with the 2 spins we have not equivalent. So immediately when equivalent representation appears, we have an improvement. And the most important thing is the asymptotical gain. Instead of having 1 over n, the use of equivalent representations provides 1 over n squared. So it's a power law which is given by this use of the group theoretical analysis. Another way to see this result is to note that this 8 pi square over n square, which is actually the best known protocol, is the same protocol, the same asymptotics of another protocol which exploits 2 n spins and the entanglement between sender and receiver. You can remember from the previous talk, this protocol, I don't review the whole story of how does it works, but the important thing is this. From Bob's point of view, what happens is that n spins go to the unknown SUD channel, and n spins go through a trivial channel which performs no transformation. This is a protocol in the spite of dense coating, as you can see. So, there are clearly improvements with respect to this protocol, And the difference due to the use of Fourier representation are the following. First, we need only half number of qubits, not two n qubits, but only n. We don't need shared entanglement between Alice and Bob. And more, there is no need of a shared reference frame at the beginning of the protocol. So this protocol is really absolute, the protocol using the equivalent representation is really absolute, because it uses only the unknown group theoretical channel, and not an additional channel. There is only a little problem. The problem is that the asymptotic behavior is the same, but the behavior for fixed, the actual value for fixed number of spins are slightly smaller in the case of when we forget about entanglement. But now with our group theoretical analysis, we can say something about this. What we learned is that what really matters is not entanglement, but multiplicity. So what we need is to have more multiplicity than dimension for each possible value of J. The main problem in the absolute protocol is that for the highest value of the angular momentum, the multiplicity is 1. So really, we don't need to add other n spins for adding the right multiplicity. We need only an external system which dimension is n plus 1, which is exactly the dimension of the highest value, the dimension of the highest value of angular momentum representation. So we need not n spins for reproducing in theory this protocol, but we need simply log n plus 1 spins. So we can reproduce exactly that protocol using an external system whose dimension is n plus 1. And the total number of spins is not 2n, but it is n plus log n plus 1. And the external entanglement, if you want to see as an entanglement between sender and receiver, this external entanglement is bounded logarithmically by log of n plus 1. So the conclusion is that this external entanglement can be completely thrown out, because the real hard resource is the number of transmitted qubits. And entanglement is a neglectable resource compared with the number of transmitted qubits in the unknown channel. That's good because that means that a real absolute alignment is possible because we need only the unknown channel. This idea can be generalized to any protocol which follows the dense codic spiral theory. The idea of the dense coding protocols is that we have two copies of a system, and one copy undergoes a transformation, and the other copy is not touched by anything. So, a standard dense coding scheme needs two copies of the system, and if the system is three-dimensional, we need two log d qubits for implementing it. But we can use the idea of multiplicity, we can use what we learned for reducing the number of additional external qubits and for reducing the amount of shared entanglement which is needed. Actually, what we need is at most to add a capital D dimensional system, where capital D is the maximum dimension over the possible reducible representations. So also the external entanglement can be bounded by a log of capital D. And there are simple examples. The first one can think is the example of phase estimation. In that case, the irreducible representation have dimension 1, so capital D is 1, and the amount of required entanglement is log 1, which is 0. That means that in this case, for phase estimation, there is absolutely no need of entanglement, as long as we allow general possible measurement. I think that's the conclusion. So, the idea of maximum likelihood approach allowed us to say something general about the problem of group theoretical estimation. It revealed an underlying structure, and this revealed also this method of using the entanglement between representational spaces and multiplicity spaces. This is the key point in the alignment problem for minimizing the transmission errors and having the best use of quantum resources. At the end, it's possible to use the same ideas in a discussion about the scoring, and we can minimize the number of external entanglement which is required for this kind of protocols. I think that's all. Thank you for your attention.
Questions? No? The TOVM that you're using for the memory, is it correct that, if I understand correctly, that it's not identical to just your fiducial state?
So you may be missing something? Well, I missed the
word.
You asked the TOVM is correct in the last?
No, I'm asking if my understanding is correct.
Ah, sorry. And what's your understanding?
Well, I haven't finished.
Sorry.
If the POVM is not the same as your fiducial state transformed by your group operation, but slightly different because of this,
yes,
this difference in the...
Yes, in the coefficients.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or in the coefficients, or just in the indexes? Or the range of your index?
No, in the coefficients.
So perhaps you could explain that again?
So... You heard this?
Yeah.
So this is the best POVM in the maximum likelihood approach for a fixed input state. That means that the state has here, instead of the square root of the dimensions, has some coefficient here.
Sorry, what has some coefficient?
The state. The state is written over there. So, this is the expression of the state in canonical decomposition. For having the POVM, you need only to substitute this coefficient, Ci, with the square root of dimensions.
So have you determined, did you determine the Ci mu?
Yes, but at the beginning you assume a general state. So
what was the result of Ci?
Sorry, your question is about the concrete problem of reference frames. Of alignment of Cartesian axis.
I don't know. I thought you were saying you had a general solution for any group.
Yes, what I mean is that if you fix the input state, you can get this is the optimal QVM.
Sure, but part of the problem is also optimizing the input state.
Yes, that's the next slide. The optimization for the optimization for maximum likelihood is this. So basically, the state is proportional to the vector in the POVM.
Well, no, that's precisely what I was asking about, because it looks slightly different to me. If you look at the range of the I index in that expression goes to K mu, whereas in the previous expression I thought it went to M mu.
Yes, sorry. There's a little error in the previous, sorry. I was a bit cheating, maybe, because in this expression you have chi mu actually, this expression is not complete. Gives not a complete POVM over all the Hilbert space. Gives a complete POVM only in the subspace which contains the pure state. So if you want a well-defined POVM over the whole Hilbert space, here you need to complete what I wrote there with an additional operator, which is totally unconsequential for the result of optimization.
Well, so in fact, not what you've written there, but what you should have written there.
Sorry?
So in fact, if you've written it correctly there, then you would have... The POVM you've written there is complete, but...
It's completed only in a subspace.
That one?
That one?
No, sure, that one is complete.
That one?
Yes.
That one is not a correct Fugian.
Why?
You can't have one Fugian when the multiplicity is greater than the dimension.
No, but you've got in there, not have.
Yes, there is a mistake.
Yes, but so I said he is right with correct one.
The correct one has a kinu there.
It should be friendly.
Yes, it should
yes,
be friendly.
And then it's not complete.
Yes, and yes, you need to complete it with another operator, which is not important for optimization, but is important only for a well-defined things. Okay.
So you showed that it helps to have a superposition of states over all the equivalent representations.
Only KMU.
KMU, okay.
Yes.
KMU equivalent representations.
Not a word, but...
And then you said we should take it with a uniform superposition. So how did you prove that it should be uniform?
In the case of maximum likelihood, it is written in the state. This is the optimal state for maximum likelihood.
Okay, so...
And there you have a uniform superposition for the set distributions that cannot depend on the neighbor of the representation. It depends only on the equivalence class. So in each class you have a uniform superposition and the different classes are weighted by a square root of the function.
Is it easy to understand why it's uniform?
Why it's uniform? I don't know if it's a sufficient answer, but if you want to optimize using the Schwarz inequality here, you need to let this vector is parallel to this. And so each value of I must correspond to the same weight if you want parallel vectors.
It's uniform in the POCN, so that it will be a POCN.
Yeah.
And it's uniform in the state, and for the Schwarz inequality, the states have to be parallel to the POCN.
Come back to the very first question asked in the previous weekend, and about what is actually the use of what we have. And I was trying to figure out some reason of this. Because I was thinking, what would it be good for if I have a reference for my friend who comes to the galaxy and also a friend of mine in my friend? What does it mean to have the same friend in galaxies? And I guess that means something. Except if I have a distinct parallel transport from here to there. And then that depends, of course, on the trajectory that I'm going. Actually, also some classic communications in language for detection. You also need to allow conversations. You also need to have actually some kind of problem with this. But there's one problem, namely that the way we usually do it by using many cheap photons and the very elementary measurements. So what we're essentially doing is create cheap photons.
Yes, what I think is that this analysis is a strong effective one, and so it is useful for giving unique guidelines for experimental studies. I don't think it's very easy to prepare such kind of thing. I think it could be possible. But the idea that I would like to see in some of the experiments is the use of human representation for example, of campaigns. Because that's the mechanism. So the actual optimization is a question of refining details to have a nice, the best, which is the best theoretical problem. But from the point of view of experimental physics, I think that there is an important completely concept. And so the concept of this work is the use of the concept of the and a lot of the application, I think that you are more interested in the and maybe there are many interesting applications about the digital creation. So it can be in the other interpretation by Robin. Yeah, it's back about the cryptography, and this is
I just would like to understand the logic of your thing. I mean, what is your figure of merit? First question.
Yes, the figure of merit is the average of the square distance between the estimated axis and the real one. In the sense, we have an estimated x-axis and the real x-axis. So we take the difference between these two vectors in the normal Euclidean space, and we square this, and then we sum over x, y.
So it's exactly the same as the one I described in my.
Yes, this is the same
figure. Doesn't make sense. Then, now we're using maximum likelihood. So, I mean, usually the figure of merit you introduce in a problem because you want to optimize something,
yes.
Make maximum this figure of merit.
Yes.
So, my question is, what has maximum likelihood to do with the maximization of, in this case, the minimization of the error? Because I can show you, because, you know, easily, give you examples of, I mean, maximum likelihood will give you a guess of some sort.
Yes.
But usually this guess is not optimal in the sense that it
does
not.
That was what I said. I'm not interested in the refined version of optimality. I'm interested in the hardcore of the problem. And I think that the maximum likelihood reveals exactly this, this the underlying mechanism. Then you can optimize and refine all the results. But as you can see in this case, maximum likelihood was pretty good in the sense that it gives the best protocol which is up to minority. So I think it's not so distant to. But also in the for finite numbers, the difference is very small.
Just by chance. What I mean is that you might not get that lucky in another situation. I mean, maximum likelihood can get, you know, in the asymptotic limit, when you're using local measurement and things like that, maximum likelihood works very well. It's actually known to separate, you know, whatever.
Yes.
But when you're using sort of generalized measurements, collective measurements, maximum likelihood usually is not optimal.
Yes,
so
but I know, but you have to stick with it. There is a point.
This is very much understanding.
What I did is a partial optimization. I use the maximum likelihood as a guideline, as an ansatz. There are ansatz. Simple. I didn't prove this rigorously. I said that this is a philosophy, is an idea, and then I exploit this idea for a partial optimization. So I call this, I assumed a loss of generality. I choose this loss of generality. But I think that it's a good approach because I think that about this problem, there are no real proof of something.
No,
let's just take a few more questions and then you guys can discuss them. I have a question before I make a comment. There is a figure of merit associated with natural type
position. Sure.
Which is a good
Either you stick to this figure of merit or you stick to the error, but not to use the things. That's what I'm saying. I don't understand the logic in this sense.
The problem is that since I can't perform a complete optimization, I choose the easiest way. Because if you want to obtain the same result and you have an easier way, I think it's the better thing to use the easier way. Because it's not.
You mentioned the uses for the groups. You have some storage for the groups, but it was only for instance, the company is for storing the contactless, so they don't have to
put it in the storage. Yes, yes. In the case of low compact groups, what you have to do is to replace this dimension with another coefficient, which is something like a formal dimension, with this value. For example, for the dialysis group in the weekly dimension, this number is 1. It's not infinite, it's simply 1. What matter is this number? What it is? This number, you need a few dozen words for any kind of comet number. Words for a square sum of values of this. It means that you can integrate the expectation values, square models of expectation values over the group. The important is that the integral is fine. So the number becomes the integral of the vector for the expectation values of the operator integrator of the group. So, for example, for Heisenberg, which is a for Heisenberg, which is irreducible, then in that case, what I call for this representation is equal to the integral into alpha of the price. This is the metric in the group, the uniform length. The root of the vector, the operator, and this integral is what you have to substitute with the dimension, and that is 1, it's not infinite. So it's possible to fit in the infinite dimension, but there are problems here in the infinite dimension because. You can't take a priori uniform distribution. So using maximum likelihood in that sense, using a covariance neighborhood in that sense, means that you want something which is independent of the a priori distribution. So you can ask optimality for a larger class of distribution and then you get covariance.
So you follow the means of the a posteriori.
Yes.
The likelihood is converging.
Yeah.
Yes. This is really guaranteed.
Yes. There is no Cramer Rao value for this quantum maximum likelihood because it's not a statistical one. But we will keep your proof that we can follow.
Okay, there's else questions now? So this is sort of a question or a comment which relates to the previous one.
Yeah.
I mean, I think so. You showed that in your case, the maximum likelihood. Using that as a guide gives you asymptotically as well as good as doing the proper optimization.
Yes, and also for small values. So
yeah, okay. But there are other problems, like I understand, like just U1, just phases in which the maximum likelihood state does poorly compared with the actual optimized state.
I know that phase estimation is one of the cases for pure state where maximum likelihood works better because
looking at the mean square error.
There is a Hollywood theorem about optimization and it says that the optimal QTM is the same.
No, I'm not talking about the optimal QTM, I'm talking about the optimal state.
And the optimal state, that's the mean too.
I think if you follow your procedure in that case,
yes,
you'll get a state that asymptotically performed.
Maybe it's a little bit different figure of magnitude. You have to change that. But the idea of using multiplicity, using only one representation in the case of phase, is independent. It depends only on the canonical control.
Sure. So the structure will be the same.
Yes.
I'm just saying, but the flat coefficients that your method would say,
lead to even poor asymptotic results. In
yeah, you have to improve the result. But also in the case, I didn't take the exact maximum vector, but I varied the coefficient.
Oh, in what case? In the results which you gave here.
Yes, when I settled the problem for absolute alignment, I wrote, an answer state with the arbitrary coefficient.
So you're not actually using... So
I didn't use the same vector as maximum likelihood, but I used this only as a guideline. Instead of having the square root of dimension, I put the different...
So the only thing that you're using this maximum likelihood for is to say these are the states which you should superpose the coefficients you have to go and find.
Yeah.
That's all.
And also the PVM. I didn't optimize the PVM. I took possibly the maximum likelihood.
Sure, but that's... Yeah, okay. But generally, optimizing the state is more difficult than optimizing the PVM.
Because you have first to optimize the PVM and then optimize over all possible states.
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. It wasn't clear in your talk that the results you gave were not actually the states that you wrote up.
No, it was in the state that I wrote for rotations.
We have a long discussion session. We have lunch now for an hour and discuss until you have something. Let's thank all the speakers today. And just